Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 52! 1 year, we've made a year of these.
1 year of these.
Kind of.
It's like a month of Sundays.
A month. It's more like almost 2 months of Sundays.
Yeah, it's close to, but, you know, 30 Sundays is more than half a year.
What about February?
Okay, fair enough. that maths out a little bit better.
Yeah, we're getting
closer.
The 28 and 30 is 58, we're only six short.
Sounds about good.
There's a cat just chirping in the background.
Cats chirp now?
Not my cat does.
Your cat is part bird. You have a cat bird.
Listen.
It won't do it on command.
No, it won't. It stopped. It was doing it every 10 seconds, and then it just looked at me.
Is it like in Mythbusters where you have to hold a duck in front of it?
I think so.
So you hold a duck in front of the cat, and then the cat will quack it back and forth at the duck?
Maybe. I
don't know. This seems completely plausible. I think that this is real life.
Yes. So this is episode 52. This is our season one ending extravaganza.
Yep, it's going to be so extravagant.
So extravagant. We bought caviar and really expensive champagne.
Yeah, I threw all that shit in the garbage, though.
Why?
Because it's nothing but liquor made in a bathtub for this boy.
Okay, that's fair.
Bathtub liquor.
Bathtub liquor.
Spelled with two Ks, L-I-K-K-E-R.
Oh, is that how we... I didn't know that's how you spell liquor.
Well, when you make it in a bathtub, that is how you spell it.
Dear Lord, cat, stop.
Is that what you're checking in?
No, I'm not.
Checking in with cat retardation?
I don't know if it's retarded.
Kitty's a little special.
If it understands it, if it keeps making that noise, I'll pay attention to it.
Yes, but you'll pick it up and put it outside of the room, I hope.
And then I'll just scratch at the door.
Yes, it will.
That's all over here.
You need to be able to turn these cats off while you're recording.
I know, if I can only mute them.
If you can only mute the cat.
I need some wet food. I think that'll mute them. For about 5 seconds, and then they'll go,
meh. Yep.
Meh.
I hope there's not quite this much cat talk in the final cut.
This week in Cat Talk, Eric and Robbie talk about wet food.
Brought to you by Fancy Feast.
Fancy Feast. It's fancy.
It's wet.
But with that, this episode Cat Talk is over, and it's time for checking in.
Oh, God. Can't cat fancy with Eric and Robbie.
Yes, cat fancy. Eric, what did you do this week?
It's been a long time coming. I have finally finished A Dance with Dragons.
Ooh.
Are you proud of me?
I am. What are your thoughts?
I borderline hated it.
Whoa! Really?
Yeah, dude. It really felt like a lot of just meaningless droning on. Like, I like, you know, the political maneuverings and stuff like that. Like, it's really cool to see that aspect of it, which you get a little bit more of, but it really felt like they were introducing a lot of characters for them to die. You know, there were a lot of interesting things happen. A lot of people turned back up that you thought were going to be out of the picture. You know, he's taken to showing people, like, he sort of moves the attention away from them right as they're about to die, or it looks like they're about to die, and then all of a sudden they're back in the story. that happened several times towards this, and hopefully I'm being vague enough that everyone's not just going to be angry.
Well, I do want to discuss a little bit of spoilers with you.
Let's do it. I figured we'd get into a little bit of that. So
yeah, folks,
everybody, spoilers.
If you haven't read the last Game of Thrones book, spoilers.
Or if you're a time traveler, haven't watched the next to last season of Game of Thrones.
There's probably going to be like 6 more seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, probably so.
But Jon Snow.
Yeah.
Do you think he's dead, or do you think?
No, right. I really don't think he's dead. I think that Jon Snow is, if he is dead, I'm going to be angry because I kind of think he's the most important character in the story, but I think he might die later, but I do not think he's going to die now.
I think Lord of Light's going to bring him back.
I think you might be correct on that matter. I imagine a lot of people are thinking that
it seems like the obvious thing.
Yeah, that he's kind of the hero, because they're really doing a lot of, it seems they're really telegraphing that Stannis was not the hero.
Yeah.
That Melisandre was talking about, and it seemed pretty obvious that it could be Jon. I don't know. I hope he's pretty important.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't necessarily know that he's coming back, because, I mean, he was kind of doing that whole thing that Ned did.
Yes.
Where you're like, oh, look how noble I am. Look how, like, I'm trying to be the best for everyone. And
exactly. And that's what gets you killed in the Game of Thrones universe.
That's what gets
4 knives in your back.
You get killed.
Yeah.
Don't be good.
Well, let me go rape some homeless women. Maybe I'll stay alive.
I nearly just spit out a mouthful of Coke.
That's what you do.
Yeah. That is what happens, though. If, like, you're a good person.
Oh, yeah.
You get destroyed.
Ramsay Bolton will live forever.
Probably will.
Oh, my God. It just makes me sick. I'm really curious to find out if Stannis and his whole company is really dead, because I don't remember seeing a scene. That's kind of the thing that George R. R. Martin does, is he just, time passes and he refers to people being dead or things happening. And you're like, well, I don't remember this happening. And then later it turns out that that's just misinformation,
yes,
an unreliable narrator, mm-hmm, some device like that. And it's kind of confusing, particularly when you listen to these things as you're going to sleep, which I am wont to do. But no, it's just a little bit exhausting. I think I got mostly worn down by listening to all the stuff about Daenerys, who in the first books was easily my favorite character, and then quickly became really, really, really boring.
Yeah, the whole situation there is stagnated.
Yeah, it really did stagnate.
And I think a problem of that is because of just how the plot is. Like, she can't come over.
Yes.
Right now.
Like, exactly. She is delaying because she needs to be there for the climax for the next book or two.
Yes, you can't have her there right now. She has to wait.
Exactly. It's kind of a lot of bullshit. So it was, and that's really the problem with this book. And I actually enjoyed the last book because it introduced characters that I thought were interesting. And I really liked seeing Cersei get hers. There were a lot of things about book 4 that I liked, and this one, if it was half as long as it was. That, and I liked Sam. Sam is one of my favorite characters. He's very dynamic.
I hate Sam.
Oh, I love Sam.
I don't like Sam.
I love Sam so much. Don't like Sam. Anyone with, like, strong emotion and overcoming, like, an obstacle like that. Sam, I love Sam. I'm dying to see what happens to Sam.
Don't like Sam.
Everyone has characters that they dislike.
I like most of the characters.
They're most of them are endearing. Right now, I'm really down on Daenerys, but yeah.
I assume it's time for me to talk about things now.
You are welcome to, my friend.
Okay.
The floor is yours. Oh. The imaginary floor.
The imaginary floor.
Between our Skype session.
first thing I want to check in is a podcast, which I have listened to the entirety of. Open and Shut Case. And I think that's one of the things I like about it. It's called the Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project. If you could say that 10 times fast in a row.
Blood will shoot out your nose.
Yeah, he routinely, as he's been promoting it on other podcasts, he routinely mispronounces it. But but basically, Andy Daly, he recently has been most famously, the program Review is out on Comedy Central. He's been in that. That's the biggest thing he's been in. But he's, you know, he's an improv guy in LA. He's always in Comedy Bang Bang, all the Earwolf shows. He's in a lot of those. This show is basically built around all his characters that he's created for Comedy Bang Bang. And basically it's like the concept is that all these characters have recorded their own podcasts and then submitted them to Earwolf as a pilot. That's, for them to be picked up.
That's very conceptual.
Yeah, and there's 8 episodes, and that's it. They're about an hour and a half to 2 hours long each. There's the first one. I start with the first one, and if you don't like it, don't bother with the rest. The first one is it's this character called Dalton Wilcox, poet laureate of the West.
This sounds like it's picking on a Prairie Home Companion.
Not really.
No. I kind of wish it was, because Prairie Home Companion kind of sucks.
My next sneak preview for our next episode, I'll check in with something that compares to Prairie Home
Companion. Uh-oh.
Ooh. Tune in. But this is, it's called Wit and Wisdom of Dalton Wilcox, poet laureate of the West or something. And he's like this cowboy who fancies himself a poet, but knows nothing about poetry. He's published a book that's almost 400 pages long, and he's up front. He's like, this podcast is only to try and drum up some publicity for my book. But then he gets Paul F. Tompkins to come in and play his publisher, who he insults the entire time.
That's magnificent.
Paul
F. Tompkins insults him, or he insults
No,
Paul
he
F.
insults he insults Paul F. Tompkins. He's like a city slick. He's like, you city slick, and you're terrible at book publisher. No one's bought my book. And there's all these episodes. They're very different. They're all very weird characters, all very dark. Almost all of them include murders in one form or another. One is like a game show type format. One is like an exercise program. One is like a review of plays. And all kinds. It's all very dark, very awful stuff. But I was laughing my ass off at my desk, like trying to stifle my laughter. People are like, I'm just like trying not to laugh out loud. Listen to the first episode.
Would you recommend that I give it a shot? Do you think
I
would like it?
Yes, especially the first episode. Okay. I think you'll really like this first one. Because it really plays on that whole Western kind of Western motif, and they even have a comedy country band come in at the end. It's very good. You give the first one a listen, and then move on if you. There's only 8 of them anyway. I listened to them in 2 days. Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project. Other thing I want to talk about is Full Mojo Rampage. It's a video game.
A video game?
I know.
They have games for video now?
They do. It's another roguelike game.
You are very roguelike, apparently. Should I look out for backstabbing?
I don't think so.
Are you a backstabber?
I'm not a backstabber at all.
No?
I
Are you a face stabber?
As you know, I've recently started as a magic user in a D&D game. So
That is true, speak. Yeah, or you don't shoot them.
Or I miss them entirely.
Or you miss them
entirely. That's also quite possible.
As we are all very good at rolling ones and threes. And I rolled 3 4s in a row.
3 4s in a row.
3 4s in a row. What are the odds of that, statisticians?
5%?
I don't know. I don't want to think.
I think I like roguelike games so much is because you can play them relatively short amount of times.
Yeah.
Like, you can play for like 30 minutes and that's good. You don't have to devote a lot of time to it. This one is probably the prettiest roguelike game I've seen. It's very nice looking. Sort of plays like Diablo kind of feel, like top down, shooting stuff, shooting beams at enemies as they appear. You obviously it's all the same kind of things as roguelike games. It's, you know, permanent death, trying to build up items. There's more RPG elements than there are in Risk of Rain, which I talked about last week. Right. This, you can actually carry things into each game, which improve your characters. And there's even the kind of quests. There's more of a kind of direction than there is in any of the other roguelikes I've played. The story is relatively simple. You're like this voodoo avatar, like this, a voodoo soul, they call it, but you basically just can create like this little voodoo avatar that is trying to serve all these voodoo gods and, kill all these evil spirits and different, and multitude of things. It's very, very pretty, very nice looking. It's $9 on Steam right now.
That's a fair price. Is it part of the roguelike sort of model? That the world is procedural and that it changes every time, or
yes it is. Okay. There's also, it's not one world. There's different, like there's a dungeon crawl type world,
right?
And then there's, I haven't gotten past the first quest yet, so I can't speak for the rest of them. But and then there's kind of these more open ended worlds where there's these portals that you have to close to finish the world. But there's also little doors you can go in and out of that could take you to vendors or to like shrines where you can talk to the gods or all kinds of stuff. And once you finish, it has kind of like a map like Super Mario, where it, you know, you can go sneak off into different paths that have different events at each one that you can either, you know, do a little quiz or go on. I just did one where there's an alternate dimension is opened up where chickens are invading. Do you want to help?
Sounds exactly like the kind of thing I want to do.
But you go.
Let's
to this,
make a weekend of it.
But it looks like an old style like video game, like an old vector based graphics.
Oh, really? So it's,
yeah,
it's...
and the chickens are just big C's.
Oh,
and you kill chickens. They're just C's. You kill a chicken, and a little dollar sign will be there, or a little circle.
It's retro. It's like. God, that's taken me back. That's crazy.
Yeah, and that's just one of the things you encounter. It's just very weird.
Does it look like Dwarf Fortress?
A little bit.
I was going to say, this cannot be the first time we brought up Dwarf Fortress, even on this podcast.
I have never played Dwarf Fortress.
I don't know that I ever want to play it either.
No, it's an interesting thing, but I do not want sink 100 hours into a game that is purposefully obtuse.
Do you think you would sink 100 hours into it?
I could see myself doing it.
You have that kind of OCD ness about you, don't you?
If I get into it, it's dangerous. That's why I stay away. That's why I never started buying HeroClix.
that would ruin your life, wouldn't it?
That'd be a rabbit hole I just could not get out of. I'd have 300 HeroClix just stacked around the house.
You do have a lot of action figures.
I know, and that's
enough. Blind box toys.
Those are bad too, but they're not near. HeroClix would be 10 times worse. And they just released a Marvel dice game with collectible dice.
They know how to tap the vein, don't they?
It sold out. The starter pack sold out everywhere.
I am not even surprised.
But Full Mojo Rampage, a lot of fun so far. By far the prettiest roguelike game I've seen. That gets points for me because most of the games are very good games, but they're just kind of ugly. This game is, you know, nice cel shaded graphics and pretty stuff. And that's all I got.
Yay,
we made it. Made it through another week of checking in. But with that, I think it's time for the floppiest part of the week.
Certainly the floppiest part of mine.
Yeah. It's time to flop it out. It is time for weekly floppies.
Woo! Oh. That was me making fun of our sound.
That was our little sound.
Is that what it sounds like when you do it?
With my mouth, it does.
When you do it with your mouth.
We're going to start off with Marvel this week, and we're going to do Moon Knight, number 3.
I was kind of hoping we would end with this.
Oh, really? You wanted me to flip it?
No. Let's go for it.
Okay, in which Moon Knight punches ghosts?
Yes, that's all you need to take away from this, other than the fact that it's awesome.
Yeah, written by Warren Ellis, art by Declan Shelby, Jordy Belair, doing colors, Chris Alopoulos on letters.
Chris the Greek.
Yep, Chris the Greek. Make
it simpler. Chris Giro.
Yep. In this, that's the
Chris
solicitation.
Fought the lava.
The solicitation for this book is literally Moon Knight punches ghosts. In this issue, Moon Knight punches ghosts.
We feel pretty certain, penned by Warren Ellis's own wretched hands.
I think, from what I remember, he writes his own solicitations.
Yes,
and we see a different aspect of Moon Knight. This kind of ghost fighting aspect, the Ghostbuster Moon Knight.
The clearly the Ghostbusteriest aspect ever.
Yeah, he's fighting, he's wearing like Egyptian ghost armor. And ghost knucks.
Yep.
He's wearing some ghost knucks.
Ghost Knuckle. Ghost Knuckle sounds like a fucking awesome metal band, doesn't it?
It should be. And he punches some ghosts and their fucking heads explode.
I mean, why wouldn't they?
Yeah, ectoplasm everywhere.
Yep. And ghost maggots.
I continue to love this book. It's up there with Ms. Marvel and Thor: God of Thunder.
It is
with my favorites in Marvel right now.
This was a nice, just kick-ass, awesome action story with really cool visuals.
Yes,
you know, it's nice that Ellis is. Not, I mean, he's not just going to go all high concept on you just all the time. He's not afraid to, I don't know, he's not afraid to put a bunch of beat-em-ups in there, and I kind of enjoy that. It's, this is shaping up to be a really, really fun book.
Yeah, the art style is similar, that, you know, Moon Knight, while in costume, is still uncolored.
Yes.
He's all white, but
this has got to be the easiest job that Jordy Belair ever took.
I don't know.
That's an ironic statement.
Oh,
but you understand she has 40 jobs a month.
Yes, she does. She does.
She colors a million comic every books. Book ever.
But it basically this issue sees some like these punk gang. From assumably this late 70s or 80s, their ghosts are haunting people and beating them up. And so Moon Knight has to switch over to his ghost knucks and his Egyptian ghost fighting armor to beat him up.
Bunch of crap he doesn't even remember buying.
No. Well, he's a psychopath.
He bought it at Comic-Con.
He did buy it. That's probably
what I don't even remember buying this crap!
I think the one the stuff I read online is people don't like it because there's not a lot of text. Like they say, oh, it reads too quick. I'm like,
the last one read too quick too, and I think if your only criticism is I want more of it,
yeah,
then somebody's doing their job right, not wrong.
Right, and I think that I like that. I think a lot of writers too often try and put too much, like they feel like they have to have talking and text all the time. And when you're beating up ghosts, what do you need to say?
You need to say, holy shit, this is awesome.
It's another one-shot story that is showing a different aspect of Moon Knight, and I suspect we'll get one more, and then another issue that kind of ties things together to a certain point.
Here's something I'm deadly curious about. Who are the guys in the room when he's Mr. Knight and he's all beat up?
Those are the people, his alternate personalities.
That's what that's what I was wondering there. So go into that then.
That he used to, like when he, before Ellis' run on this, there's been multiple takes on it.
Right.
But in one iteration, he had these alternate personalities that he talked to and overtook him and all that stuff, which is Ellis kind of Ellis kind of saying that, yes, this guy's still crazy, but it doesn't change the fact that this is literally Khonshu talking to him in his abandoned mansion. But yeah, that's what those guys are. They're just him seeing his old alternate personalities.
I was going to say, do you think that this Khonshu is kind of a bite on Pretty Deadly, but that's a horse skeleton? The death in that?
Yes, I think so.
I wonder what kind of bird he's supposed to be. I'm sure it's very significant and important to, you know, all that Egyptian crap.
I'm not sure. I don't know. It's probably some sort of, it's probably just a visage of Khonshu himself. So it's,
oh yeah.
Like, I want more of this, but that's not a slight on it. That's a good thing about it.
That is definitely a good thing about it. I would high five Warren Ellis for this issue. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's the guy like beating up ghosts. It's great.
So here's a question.
Question.
Yeah, we've said dumb punching quite a lot.
Right.
And I think that it's an apt way to describe a lot of the books that we've read.
Mm-hmm.
It's just full of dumb punching. Mm-hmm. Why in your opinion is this not dumb punching? Because most of this book seems like it's just wall to wall, you know, splash pages of him posing and punches landing and reaction shots. And it's a half to a third of the book is just one fight scene.
Yes.
So why is this not dumb punching in your mind?
Well, it's focused.
Right.
There's not
3,000 Moon Knights fighting Sinestro.
No, it is a very simple kind of, it's a weird story, but it's very simple. I mean, Moon Knight tries to beat these ghosts up. He fails. He gets his ass kicked. So he changes his strategy and goes to another. It shows something new about the character. You see a new aspect. Him, this supernatural fighter guy. The art is unbelievably great.
It is really, really cool looking.
The pages are simple, clean, and really show the action well. Like you mentioned about the Sinestro Core War thing, where it's like 100 people on the page. I have no idea what's happening. Like, I see him. Look at this. He has ghost knucks. He punches a guy's torso in half. Then his head off. Like, it's clear what's happening. There's a beginning, middle, end. It's a story that's told well. It's not in one issue. It looks great. It's showing stuff about the character without show, don't tell, the whole thing. It works on that level.
Right.
Reveals, you know, makes me looking forward to the next one. It's simple. A lot of it is stuff I can't necessarily describe.
I think you're doing a good job.
Superhero comics are great at showing punching, and I don't mind, you know, fight scenes.
Some
as
punching.
Long as they're well executed.
Right. Punching is
not. And this
not...
is the, this is the epitome of execution.
Yes.
Like Bret Hart.
The epitome.
Exactly. But I am certainly buying Moon Knight number 3. This book's...
Yeah, I'm a strong buy. This is why I kind of wish we had wrapped up with it. It's my favorite book this week. Easily.
All right, next up, Original Sin number 1. The big, this is the first issue.
The kickoff of the event.
The kickoff of the event of Original Sin. Written by Jason Aaron, art by Mike Diodato, Frank Martin doing the colors, Chris Alopoulos, again, doing the letters. And this is the beginning of the event. We see the Watcher dead. Surprise, surprise! I know you weren't expecting that, except the giant page, the giant cover on that says, "Who shot the Watcher?" It's just kind of putting a lot of things into motion.
Right.
You know, we get a crime scene. We get Original Nick Fury.
We get.
I like seeing him. It's kind of an interesting teaming at Wolverine, Captain America, Black Widow, and Nick Fury as the guys who like first discover this along with Thor, along in Iron Man. And they're kind of forming this detective squad.
And Captain America's dressed like he's in a commercial for Wranglers.
Yes. Well, I think he's their target demographic.
He probably is.
But and then
he's gonna go throw a football around with Brett Favre.
He probably is. That'd be a great commercial. But Nick Fury is basically putting together this team, these teams of superheroes to investigate. You know, who's the killer? Blah blah blah. I mean, it's fairly rote, but well executed enough. I'm excited to see interactions between the Punisher and Doctor Strange.
Yeah, that's just fucking wacky, isn't it?
It's very odd.
They clearly call him out as the most successful mass murderer.
Yes, world's most successful mass murderer.
That shit's loaded.
But, yeah, Moon Knight, Winter Soldier, Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, Black Panther, Emma Frost. They are clearly throwing a lot of people into this book.
It is a really weird event with all that in mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's a strange concept to blend superhero and, like, detective story in this way.
Yeah. Then we have Spider-Man and the Thing fighting,
a mindless one.
Yeah, mindless one who they are. There's more of them at the end. We get a little glimpse into who's ever is responsible for this. I have no idea who they are. I zoomed in as close as I could. I cannot make out either of those two characters.
Well, I believe that that's kind of the idea. They're the mystery.
Yeah,
but, it's Omega Red. I just figured it out.
I think Omega Red's dead.
What? The plot thickens.
I just shattered your world, didn't I? It's for what it is. It's good. I like Mike Deodato. I'm a fan of him and his art. This book is not amazing.
Yeah, it's not as good as I would want it to be for a big.
But account. It's clearly setting the wheels in motion. I'm interested enough to check out the second issue. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's about where I've landed as well. I don't think it's amazing, but I'm intrigued enough, and hopefully it'll improve some.
I'm really in for it just for Jason Aaron writing all these characters. I like Jason Aaron, and the interactions of these teams he's put together, I think, will be fun. Like Doctor Strange and Punisher, and you get Emma Frost, Black Panther, and Ant-Man. You get Winter Soldier, Gamora, and Moon Knight. I think all the and old timey Nick Fury.
Yeah, old timey. He really is old timey.
He's very old timey.
He's like 90 something years old.
Yeah, precisely. And I'm more in for that. The plot, it's more, I'm just in it for the fun character stuff more than the plot itself. I'm sure it'll pick up, but you haven't seen too much in this issue. I am a buy. I am a solid buy. I'm not going to be enthusiastic about it, but for Event Comics, it seems to be good so far.
Yeah,
I'm a little wary. After we read Identity Crisis, I'm a little wary of any murder mysteries taking place in superhero comics. But hopefully there won't be any implied
no brain footprints.
No brain footprints, no raping, no mind wiping. But we'll see. There probably will be!
We'll never know.
And then I'll hate it, but whatever. I'm a bi.
I feel similarly. I'm much more squishy than you are. I say buy, but be cautious that it really feels like this could turn to crap at any moment.
Event comic.
Oh, I know. But I mean, when we were reading Infinity, at no point were we like, this is going right off the rails. This could
That's
be, I mean, it was just every week was just like, buy it. This one, I don't know if that is going to continue. I mean, I don't think that anyone was out there saying, we really need to kill off the Watcher. I don't think anyone was asking for that. I actually don't. I don't like it on that end. I really am fond of the Watcher and what if stories and all that stuff. That being said, that does intrigue me to the story, but it had just better justify killing the character even for a little bit. I mean, yeah. Whether he's going to come back or not, it's hard to say. He could be the next Bucky, and he'll be Winter Watcher.
Next Captain America, Uatu.
Yep.
So that's a double bye. A slightly squishy double
bye. Yes, yes.
But it's still there. It's still a double bye. Next up is The Woods, number one. Written by James Tynion IV. Art by Michael Dialinus. Colors by Josean Gonzalez. Letters by Ed Dukeshire. Ed Dukeshire.
The Duke of Shire.
Yeah. This is a bit, Eric had copied and pasted to the solicitation for this book compared to Moon Knight. And Moon Knight is 7 words, and this book is
1,500.
Yeah, it's a lot. But basically, a school is transported into this weird dimension of the woods.
I can summarize this even shorter than that.
Okay, go ahead.
It's like Lost with teenagers.
Yeah, a little bit. Though Lost is supposedly on our planet.
Yes.
This is clearly not. This is some place where there's bats with 4 wings, and there's a giant ringed planet and or moon. They say they're on a moon, I think.
Yeah,
one of the nerdy kids.
Yeah, that we're on the moon of this bigger planet here.
But the idea is a little, yeah. I did like this book.
You did.
I did. I did. There was at least one moment where I'm like, oh shit, I didn't expect that.
When the girl with glasses was
Cute little girl that they're trying to comfort, yeah, and she was
killed to let you know that the story is serious.
Yeah, I understand, but I try not to get caught up too much in the process. I do. It is a little bit character tropey, but a whole bunch of a weird outcast group of teenagers wandering into woods on an alien planet and to embark in some kind of alien test. I like it enough.
The
little girl got eaten.
Right, right. Now, I was sort of teetering. I was on the fence about how I felt about it. Nothing was really wowing me or impressing me, and it didn't help that it reminded me of Lost so quickly into the story, because I dislike Lost thoroughly. And then it got to the end where the girl's like, and I'm the girl, and I'm gonna tattle on you, or I'm going with you. And I'm like, that's retarded. That's terrible. And all of a sudden, I think that I don't like this anymore.
I think, it reminds me of also of The Mist. Mm-hmm. Stephen King story, where they all get trapped in a supermarket and weird creatures are around.
So maybe that's really what, I mean, this is clearly, like, you even said tropey yourself.
Yeah.
And it's clearly borrowing from other kinds of fiction or other pieces of fiction. And I think maybe that's the difference here, is it reminds me of fiction that I thoroughly dislike, and it reminds you of someone that you like and admire.
Well, I do see the Lost in it. I don't mind Lost.
I would have thought, so do you like it or are you indifferent to it?
I like it when it's good.
See,
it depends on the episode. Some of the episodes are really, really good. Like the first season, if you just watch just the first season, amazing.
See,
but the problem is it went on for 6 seasons.
Yeah.
Now, so there's a lot of holes.
No, it's true. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense. Like why would you ever need to enter numbers into a computer? I mean, that's just dumb. Why would you need to do something repetitive to a computer that a computer can do on itself? That's just bad.
I like what do you think about the art on it?
It's okay-ish. I don't know. It seems to me like it could be tightened up a lot. Like there's a lot of messiness in the faces, a lot of sort of naive drawing. Like, I really think that this person was brought on to draw these monster things, because they look amazing. The teenagers, off and on, look kind of crap. You know what it reminds me of?
What does it remind you of?
Archie. Which I kind of think that they should have gone full on Archie. I think I would enjoy this much more if it was just like, if this looked like an Archie comic with monsters, I think I could let myself enjoy it.
I am a buy on this. I think it's kind of just a fun, pulpy, horror action kind of story. I'm not thinking too hard about it, but I do enjoy it. I did have fun.
Well, that's sort of where I'm coming from too, is it's not the kind of book that you can think too hard about. Like, it clearly doesn't want you to.
Right.
But I don't have enough fun reading it. So I think on that, and with that in mind, I'm a do not buy.
What? Split decision! On to what's number one. We're moving on to DC, going on to Detective Comics, number 31. Written by Brian Buccellato. Oh, what? Storytelling. By Francis Manapal and Brian Buccellato. Letters by Jerry K. Fletcher. Francis Manapal is the artist half of the pair. So I think it's fair to say he's the one drawing all this.
Probably so. It should probably be clear about that.
And doing all the inking and coloring himself. This is continuing the kind of detective story that... funny, a detective story, Detective Comics, the lady got injected with this drug and died on Bruce Wayne's doorstep, and now he's a suspect. There we go.
He's a suspect.
Bruce Wayne is a suspect. But of course, as Batman, he's also investigating her and her involvement with these drugs, and kind of people are clearly behind this, are clearly trying to cover it up, and then the Gotham police are getting involved, and Batman fights a guy named Sumo in a shipping container. What did you think about this, sir?
I think shipping containers are the cornerstone of our economy.
You might not be wrong.
Well, I'm pretty much right. I just read something about that today. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, wow.
But I will not check in with shipping containers. Okay. I will talk about Batman. Okay. No, this was a good book. I don't think that I was as blown away by it as I was by the last issue of this arc, but it looks like it's going to take a really nice shape, and I want to see where it's going, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Good action, good writing, it's intriguing and interesting, and the art's gorgeous. I mean, it is a good, good comic book. What else can you want from a Batman comic?
Yeah, it's a simple Batman as a detective story.
Yeah.
For the most part, I mean, he does do a battle with the giant sumo guy in a shipping container, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
No one swears to him, though.
Swear to me.
Swear to me!
I am hell. So it has, he does say, they won't see me coming, in like big bold letters at one point.
Yep.
But the art is gorgeous. I really, really like it. I think I like the art in this one more than I liked it in the first one.
Yeah, it is very handsome, very nicely done.
And we get some Harvey Bullock, and we get a big sumo guy, and a good detective story. It's, you know, it's solid.
Solid is a good way to describe it.
I would take this over 0 year.
Oh, Jesus Christ, yes. Easily. It's treating Batman the way Batman needs to be treated. The person that wrote this is probably just rolling his eyes at 0 year and pretty much every Batman story, and anyone that said we need to reboot the DC universe,
which we'll touch on later in the
I
show.
I can't wait.
But I am a buy on Detective Comics.
I'm an enthusiastic
this is a really,
buy.
Very strong Batman story.
Oh yeah, which we need more of because I don't want to dislike DC Comics. I want to like them.
Yeah, this is a very good Batman story. Detective Comics 31. That's a double buy. Double buy. Lastly. In leastly, in my opinion.
You really, your least favorite, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Where are the credits? There's no credits in this book. No one wrote
Hi-Fi did everything.
Written John.
Conceived by Hi-Fi.
Here it is.
Sprang writers, forth from his brain.
Well, writers, Brian Azzarello, Jeff Lehmeyer, Dan Jurgens, Keith Giffen, artist Patrick Zercher, art consultant Keith Giffen, colors by Hi-Fi, letters by Desi Cienti.
So I think that that's quite a dream team to make this book.
It's a weekly book, so they can't have... This is going to be coming out weekly. One of the three books that... They've already started Batman Eternal. That's coming out weekly. This is coming out weekly for a year, and then also they're going to be doing an Earth 2 weekly book.
That's a blistering schedule.
That's very audacious, having three weekly books all at the same time.
Can't take time to think about it. Got to shovel that crap out.
But this book is set 5 years in the future of the current DC continuity. For some reason, it has a Batman Beyond in it, who's back in time from where he is.
I mean, clearly.
There's these giant monster cyborg guys. Stormwatch is in this, promptly murder Apollo, which makes me a little upset, but whatever, it's New 52 Apollo, he doesn't count.
Yeah.
And Grifter.
Grifter, man. What?
Hey, Eric, Grifter's in this.
Grifter is in this. So Grifter's in comic books, and Monica Lewinsky's back in the news.
Yep.
Did we travel back in time?
No, we did not.
It really, really feels like it.
Hey, Firestorm's in this too.
Sure.
Fire Hair. That just seems like a complete Hawkeye kind of joke.
Yeah, it does.
Hawkeye! Yeah. But I just was not... It's as far... I guess it's okay. It's just... I don't... It's like split... There's like all these... Like what I said about Moon Knight, it's simple and focused.
Yes.
This is not simple or focused. It has multiple stories all going on at the same time, none of which seem to make any sense. And because it's a weekly book, I guess they figure they can get away with not explaining everything. Because another book's going to come out next week. I'm not too... Nothing in this book intrigues me. Even the last page, which is supposed to go...
You know, I think that it really is a trend that everyone's trying to jump on, is telling the ensemble story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is trying to be, but it's not an easy thing to do.
No.
It is very, very difficult to do, and this book... is Lehmeyer writing with Azzarello?
Yeah, I have no idea
what the labor split is, but whatever. No. These are two guys that I at least have a passing respect for as writers.
Yes, so do I.
And they're not really pulling off this ensemble very well. Like Robbie's describing, it's a little bit of a mess.
Yeah, I just don't, it seems like they got, oh, well, Stormwatch is getting canceled, and then again, this being 5 years in the future.
Yeah.
They can do anything they want, and then it won't, I hate that saying that, oh, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But within a book like this, a weekly comic, it's basically an event book.
Yes.
It's supposed to make you feel like it matters to the greater universe, but when it's happening 5 years from now, it has no connection to the current DCU. Why should I care?
Yeah.
I'm assuming that there'll be time travel, further time travel involved in this, because it's 5 years from now, blah, 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 blah. But it just doesn't matter to me that it's not far enough in the future that there's no connection so that I can just have a clean slate. It's 5 years from now. Where's Batman?
Yep.
Where's Superman? Superman's not getting involved? Stormwatch, a big satellite, a space station gets destroyed? Superman's not on the scene?
He's on vacation. He's taking a break.
I'm assuming they're going to tell that story, but And Batman Beyond, Again, I think we covered when we read that Talon book. Talon's suit is Batman Beyond's suit.
Yes.
I don't know. The art is fine.
Speaking of the art, can you can you jump to the cover and you can give me your two cents on something that is just bugging the crap out of me?
Okay.
You're looking at the cover?
I am looking at the cover.
Does the perspective look like it matches on Grifter's gun and that laser? Because it does not look like they're going the same direction to me at all.
Not really, but I just kind of went, meh.
To me, something that is a prominent focal point like that, I mean, it's clear that this artist is talented, but I do believe that someone should have helped them with that, because that looks bad.
The cover is different from the interior, I should go to say.
Different artists.
Yeah, Patrick Searcher, who did the interiors, did not do the cover. Cover was...
Well, it's all strong, but...
Cover was
unless,
Ryan Sook.
Unless that was moved to make the composition work better, or was added in entirely by the colorist, which I doubt. I don't know. I call a little bit of bullshit on that. That troubles me.
I don't know. That is the least of the things that trouble me about this book. I just don't...
Well, it's just, you know, from an art perspective, that's the way I come at things.
I know. It's just, I don't... The characters they use to try and get you excited about this are Batman Beyond, Grifter, Stormwatch, who are probably killed, and Firestorm. None of which... I mean, Batman Beyond is semi-known.
Right.
Semi-well-known. But if you're going to throw all these characters that are, like, lower-tier characters, not as well-known, just throwing them in for 4 or 5 pages does not do them justice. You don't get any kind of connection to them. And, I mean, you can take those shortcuts sometimes with, like, Batman or Superman or Spider-Man or any of those guys because everyone has connections with them.
Yes.
I don't have any kind of connection to Firestorm. And if you just throw me into his life and say, oh, look, he's broken up about this, I go, I don't, and?
Yeah, exactly. Why does he have Ghost Urkel following him around?
Yeah, they don't really establish that relationship. And if you're supposed to know that coming in, yeah. I have a feeling most people don't. I certainly don't.
He interrupts him having sex in a closet, and he's like, oh, did I do that?
He's more like Stefan.
He is a little bit more like Stefan, but he's still the nerd.
Is
that the way this works? Is one guy is the superpowers and the other guy is like physics?
I guess. And the final page has like a big shock thing. I just don't feel anything for it because there's no...
It feels like bullshit?
Yeah.
Why does this look different than the Green Arrow that we were reading?
Because this is 5 years from now.
When he grows a beard back?
Exactly. 5 years from now, he has a beard back.
I guess so.
That's all that matters.
5 years from now, it's Green Arrow.
It looks like it was Green Arrow from, like, 1987.
It really does. It looks like Green Arrow from, oh, God, we mentioned it already in this.
Identity Crisis.
Yes, I can't think of things.
But, yeah. I think we've discussed this enough. I'm a do not buy on this book. I don't... It just is a mess. It's not cohesive and it's impossible to follow. And it doesn't have any good... The hook at the end is not enough. Does not certainly interest me.
Well, personally, I am a fan of Urkel. So
okay.
I think on that level, you just have to buy it.
Is that what it is? Buy... Or fans of Urkel. Buy. So, folks, that's a double do not buy on Future Set number one.
I think an enthusiastic double do not buy. Yeah.
The New 52 : The Future's End number one.
It
just to make sure that you guys know that this is still the New 52.
The colon is in there so you know where it came from.
Yeah, the New 52 in the future, it's still terrible.
Yep, it came from Jeff Lee Myers' colon.
I have no idea how they are splitting up this work, but
they're clearly not doing a good job.
No. I would like to, that's it for Weekly Floppies. I would like to mention a few books that I did read. I don't think they really, Rat Queens came out. It's still great. I mean, most of these books are kind of, I just didn't include them because they're still great.
It's important. It's important that we read the shit books.
Not all shit. Some of them were really good.
I would imagine.
But Rat Queens is great. Black Widow, the last issue of that arc, was really good. Guess what, Eric?
Guess what?
Guess what happens in Black Widow 6.
Does she shoot a guy?
I don't think so, actually.
Does she pet a cat?
No, she does. She pets a cat.
She pets a cat. That was the big reveal was, well, I guess I'd better pet this cat.
And Magneto number 3 also came out. It's really good as well. It's fun, Magneto is the Punisher.
Magneto is the Punisher.
Now that is it for Wicked Floppies. Next, we are doing our State of the Comics Union. We're going to basically just have a conversation about where comics are, where the major publishers are, where the market's at, our thoughts on directions, all that stuff. Basically talk about why New 52 is terrible for about an hour.
That's kind of what I feel coming on.
I don't think it's going to take up an entire hour.
I can go for at least an hour.
Ooh.
I know.
Bragging about that.
You have met me before.
That's true. I have met you before. So where do you want to start? You want to start with, I say we hit Marvel with DC first, and then we can just kind of meander around.
Right. It seems like the comparison is really the apt place to start, because it feels like... I can't help but think that Disney buying Marvel is one of the reasons it's so successful right now, that they're probably... I'm not going to say that they're throwing money at writers and artists, but they have a lot of talent in both. They're having the best waves of movies coming out. They're consistently putting out the most varied and interesting products, and they're taking sort of a classic, almost Disney sense to creating good content. Or almost, I would say, maybe a Pixar sort of approach to creating good content.
Yeah, it's... Disney certainly is a very smart company.
They are now.
Yes,
They were not always when we
No,
were,
not always.
When we were younglings, they were trying so hard to tank the company.
But they have their ducks in a row, and they Marvel is...
Do. Like,
we read the Scott McCloud book.
Yes.
And he talks a lot about genre versus form, mm-hmm, in that. And Marvel's almost taking the point where, yes, their characters are all superheroes. Or the majority of them are superheroes. And putting them in genre books that aren't necessarily superhero books.
I think the clearest illustration of that is what we read this week, Original Sin.
Right.
It's a very clear illustration of that.
It's a murder mystery.
Yeah.
Like, Infinity is a sci-fi epic.
Yes.
Hawkeye? Hawkeye is certainly not a superhero book.
It's like an interpersonal drama, or not necessarily a sitcom, because it's not necessarily told in that sort of shallow way, but...
No.
But it's got that sort of... slice of life sort of storytelling to it.
Yeah, there's the second wave of Marvel now, seen the success of Hawkeye, seen the critical success of Hawkeye, and said, well, let's do that more. You have, I just mentioned Black Widow. That's an espionage book.
Absolutely.
I don't know what to call Moon Knight. It's not really, I guess it's a superhero book, but it's
you just call it wonderful.
Wonderful.
Ghost punchy goodness.
Miss Marvel, I mean, it's a book starring in a Muslim female teenager.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a very kind of varied cast and subjects matter.
You know, the thing that I think of when I think of all of these different things that you're bringing up, is all the people that I know, and I think, like, well, what do you like? You might like this story. You might like the new Ghost Rider. You like Doctor Who. You might like the new Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
You know, you like this kind of story. You like strong female characters. Maybe you're a girl.
Eric, girls don't read comic books.
Clearly, girls are all illiterate. Having a uterus makes you incapable of reading.
Yep, that's it.
That is, I mean, that's in the Bible, people. That women cannot read.
I'm not cutting that.
I hope not. I stayed up all night thinking about that.
It just seems like Marvel is purposely saying, well, let's try and broaden out our demographics.
Broaden our audience, absolutely, which is what a company does when they, say it with me, people, want to grow.
Yes. And DC is seemingly just targeting a very narrow group, a narrow demographic. And there are exceptions. And DC books yeah. That do go after a more eclectic demographic. But for the most part, I mean, we read these books every single week. Quite a wide variety of them.
You're trying to pick out books that you think will be at least okay or good, or maybe you're just trying to torment me. I don't know.
A little bit of comedy, but
no, it's pretty clear that you can hit a dartboard and you know, you can just throw darts and hit a terrible DC book. Like they're everywhere.
They've gotten better.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yes.
Mainly because they've hired on good writers.
Yes.
To try and, like, Greg Pak is probably the most notable one in my mind. He took over Action Comics and he's writing Batman and Superman. And both of them are pretty good. And Jeff Parker is writing Batman 66. Batman 66 is very different from most of the DC books.
And delightful.
And delightful. Animal Man. We really liked Animal Man. It's certainly not, it's a strong superhero book, but it's...
Thank God they canceled it. I mean, I hate that there's not a good DC book to read now.
And Larfleeze. Don't forget Larfleeze. Cancel that too.
Damn their eyes!
Yeah, they've hired on Colin Bunn. He's writing Sinestro. They're stretching Scott Snyder to the limit. Just trying to write as much as they can. I'm kind of hit and miss on Snyder, honestly.
Well, personally, a lot of people love his. I hope they just work him to death.
A lot of his Batman is just, he just writes a lot of horror, and his Batman is kind of reflecting that. And I'm just kind of, don't necessarily like a really horror take on Batman. But it just seems like most of those the ones that aren't the ones we've mentioned, or, I mean, there's a top tier of books that are good, but most of them are just kind of being superhero comics and not aiming for more than that. And they're not really that good. I could give you, like, we read, Red Hood and Outlaws. That's the one that we've read and we liked. But, I mean, Supergirl, Superboy, both bad.
Right.
This Future's End book, bad. That the Forever Evil Justice League, I don't even want to talk about how bad.
They were pretty poor.
Forever Evil is still not over, by the way. Just want to make that clear.
Well, I'm glad that we read the book about the end of it last time.
Yeah, exactly. The Trinity War started, when was it? Like fall of last year?
Jesus
and that
Christ.
that went directly into Forever Evil, and it's still going on. It's 9 months almost, I think, at this point, with an unending event that seemingly is just completely inconsequential. I just don't, and the books are terrible. And there's a market for this stuff.
I was going to say, coincidentally, how are the sales?
They're decent. Forever Evil's selling well. Justice League is selling well. People like Geoff Johns. They like just the dumbest comics imaginable with maimings for no reason. Like, I read the comic book subreddit, and I go, really? People like?
Yeah.
Like this stuff?
There's two ways you can grow your business. One is to bring in new customers. Mm-hmm. And the other is to increase your business with your old customers.
Mm-hmm.
And really, to survive, you need to do both. DC has clearly chosen to almost exclusively market at their old customer base of comic book geeks that love very, and I always say comic booky, but I just don't know quite how else to describe it. Just comic book stupidity.
Standard superhero trope.
Yes.
Genre stuff. Safe things.
Safe is safe, but at the same time, safe for that customer base. You know?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
The it'll still be sexist and just mucked with the people that I don't want representing me.
Right.
As an adult and a geek and a comic book reader.
People who liked comics in the 90s. Mainstream comics in the 90s.
Yes. Of course, I mean, I did like some, but you're not talking about me.
No.
The Liefeld army.
That's part of it, yeah. Did want to bring up Amazing Spider-Man 1. Sold 500,000 copies. Which is the most a comic has sold. I mean, that's Diamond's numbers. That's not, raw numbers from comic book stores or anything like that. So that's, I mean, obviously that's from Diamond, not from, all the comics sold from a comic book store. Comic book stores.
So what is worldwide. That the number of copies that were shipped that to comic book stores?
Precisely.
Okay.
So that's what they ordered to sell. That's what they think they're going to sell. They don't necessarily sell all of them, but they do have to pay for them. That is the largest number in over a decade for a comic. And I read an article recently about, the first 500,000 is difficult, but if you want to get a million, like, that's the heyday numbers.
Right.
Like, in the early 90s, a million comics was, like, the number people hit, like, wow, that's amazing. This issue sold a million copies. And
did X-Men number one ship a million copies?
I think it did. Over a million. Especially with all the four different covers and all that.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, but the article went on to say, like, the second 500,000 is much more difficult at getting, especially in now, than the first 500,000. The first 500,000 is hard, but the second 500,000 is incredibly difficult. And I don't think you're ever going to see another 500,000 unless, Marvel's successful, at least somewhat, in their effort to broaden their market. And I don't understand Tom Brevoort, who's an editor at Marvel. He has a forum spring, and he answers questions all the time on it. Readers submitted questions, and they ask about, they ask him about DC all the time and stuff like that. He's like, I like DC. We are competitors, not enemies. We try and sell comics because of our stories. It seems like DC's trying to sell comics because of their covers.
Hmm.
And a lot of, they had that whole 3D cover month and the lenticular covers. Like, it's a lot of just gimmicks.
The 50 states.
Yeah, that. The JLA with 50 states. A cover for each state.
Whose mom came up with that idea?
And I think that is a good way to sum it up. Like, DC has some good stories, but it seems like their leadership purposely trying to focus on that core demographic.
Yes.
Which is not growing. It is shrinking.
No, of course it's going to be, because all these 50 and 60 year old nerds are dying of heart disease.
Way to bring the show down, Eric.
Everybody knew what was happening.
I just snorted.
Yeah, you did. It was very endearing.
Very endearing. That's me.
Mr. Endearable.
I certainly enjoy Marvel more. And, on Tumblr, following a lot of creators that are, I mentioned Rat Queens. It's a mostly female cast of characters. And, you get, it, certainly brought up a lot of fans that are female, which you don't ever see. I mean, they're out there. There's plenty of female comic fans. They just get shunted aside, and a lot of it is because of the concerted efforts of the market to seemingly go, no, we don't want your money.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Really, all of this culture, comic books to superhero movies to video games to con and cosplay, all of nerd culture really needs to just man the fuck up and be a little bit more inclusive. It's almost retarded to say that.
But,
you know, it's like having to, it's...
The girls will touch my stuff, Eric.
Share your toys, Robbie!
They'll touch my stuff. It's my stuff.
Personally, I want girls to touch my stuff, but that's just me.
You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, you know, I'm going to say certain things like, stop complaining that Power Girl has a boob window. I do think that maybe it is kind of legitimate to say that these comics are marketed at dudes with an adolescent mind, but you know what? Those guys exist and they have a right to buy whatever in the shit they want. At the same time, the whole culture is broadening, and we're really poised for an indie media revolution, even more so than ever. You know, things are getting more and more narrow cast. There's more and more indie media everywhere you look. There's no reason that the whole culture can't include all of these different things and all of these different demographics. And to me, it is just a beautiful, wonderful thing.
No, I completely agree. And,
that's because you're sane. Arguably.
And there's a lot of people out there, but I don't understand this backlash of the true fan.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's
incredibly frustrating.
I kind of understand it. And I kind of understand where, like, the people that see themselves as nerds, you know, I get that because, you know, to live your whole life, you know, you're bullied and you're turning inward and you're focusing on these things that they were your special thing. You know, it was your special world that you retreated to, you know, and then all of a sudden it starts to become important in society and nerd culture becomes cool. And rather than seizing the moment and saying, yeah, this stuff is cool and I'm cool now and stepping up your game and being a grown up, people are choosing to say you're not a true nerd, you know, because you're too attractive or you're not nerdy enough, whatever that means. You're not committed enough. You're not memorizing. I mean, you don't have enough autism. And to an extent, you know, I think that to an extent, these things like Dungeons and Dragons, and this has been a sort of space, a safe space for these, for nerds to gather around and seek, you know, like-minded male camaraderie, which is something that I think that we're missing out on a lot. And to have, I mean, and it only makes sense that there would be this aggression against women. It's like, you're trying to invade my safe male space. This is my thing. You go get your own thing. But I don't know. I think it's important to share, as threatening as it may be. Does that make sense?
I understand. I just don't understand the hesitance of,
yeah.
Most of these people who say, oh, they're not true nerds, blah,
yeah,
blah, 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 they have as limited as knowledge as anyone about a given subject. And I certainly don't proclaim, I know comic books, pretty well. I don't know everything. And I'm not going to try and judge someone as a true... They're a fan. If they like something, they're a fan of it. You don't need to be, like, uber-obsessive like I can be. And read everything. I haven't read every Captain America story. I love Captain America. Does that make me a fan? Because I haven't read every Captain America comic ever? Yeah.
Like, where is that line? I mean, it's a completely squishy, indefined term. Possibly even indefinable. And really, what do you gain by defining it? Nothing.
No. If someone has never read a Captain America comic book, has seen the movies to say, I like Captain America. It might not be the same as it was when I was a teenager. My first reaction is go, well, would you want to read comics? Here's some comics to read. Like, I'd want to suggest, like, I want to get them. I like more people getting into our hobby.
Yeah.
This is a niche hobby, and it needs more people, not less. You know, you gotta stop drawing lines at a certain point. I don't understand the point of a boys club mentality when it's just media. It's just art.
No, I just think it just stems so much from insecurity.
Yeah, and I guess that's sort of intrinsic to the whole the way that comic books and nerd culture in general has been treated for mm-hmm. so long, and the type of people that have that generally do retreat to it.
Oh, of course,
I was one of those people.
Oh yeah, I think at some point we all were.
But then I became an adult, and you know, kind of go, oh well, it's just I just like things. It's fine.
Yeah,
I'm. You know,
I think it was. It was Chris Hardwick that he talks about. He sort of defined being a nerd as being unashamedly passionate about something, you know, whether it's stamp collecting or comic books or programming or sci-fi novels or whatever in the hell.
Quilting.
Crocheting. Girl stuff.
Girls.
But I think that being open-minded about other people's crazy crap is probably a good thing.
Yes.
It should probably be added to that definition. Because I know that I've been out with a girl or two that, you know, they see the comic books on my wall or the cartoons that I draw and they look down their nose at me at it. You know, and yet they have their own nerdy things.
Yeah.
You know, some of them do, some of them don't, but they're perfectly happy to judge me and tell me that I'm less of an adult. And I know for a fact that it does not make me any less of an adult. And I refuse to be ashamed of that. And I don't think any of you listening should be ashamed of it. And I think, you know, whatever people consent to, you know, what the fuck? Just let it go. Let people do their thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And
that's why inclusion is good. But you don't have to take my word for it. Da-da-da.
I think we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss Image, at least to a certain extent.
Yeah.
We hit Marvel and DC because they dominate the market. I mean, both hit over or near 30% of the market. But Image is, in their first quarter, was double digits. And I think at a certain point, I don't know how soon, it's been a slow growth for them, and it's hard in the comics industry to just explode. Walking Dead certainly has a big part of it, but Image is slowly inching it into becoming a big three.
Right.
And they are doing it by just putting out good comic books.
It's not really a mystery, people.
No, Saga, oh, Walking God. Dead, Rat Queens.
Jesus.
Sex Criminals.
Goddamn.
The list of the comic properties that they publish.
Pretty much almost everything we've raved about.
Yeah, it's
Shudder?
Yeah, Image to Shudder. But there's, I mean, I could continue on for a while about all the comics Images, and they do it by focusing on creators' rights. They let all creators maintain rights over the properties, which Marvel and DC do not.
Treat your talent like partners and not like cattle.
And their trades, they have dollar first issues generally. You know, after a comic has finished its first run or so, they'll re-release the number ones for a dollar. They have trades. Every first trade is $10, $9.99, regardless. Right now they're hosting a Humble Bundle, the first comics Humble Bundle.
Which is exciting. It's not the first Reedy Humble Bundle, but
no, the first comic book Humble Bundle. And it is an excellent deal. If you haven't read any of these books, it's all first or second volumes of a lot of the books we had just mentioned. Walking Dead, Invincible, Saga, Revival, Chew, Manhattan Projects. All really, really good books. I would buy it if I already didn't own about 3/4 or more of them. It's a great deal. It's all that kind of pay what you want up to a certain point, different thresholds, and it goes to charity.
It might just be ending as you listen to this, so go buy it if you don't have those books.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
You get it for like $10.
Yeah, a lot of comics.
Unless you just want to be a dick and pay nothing.
Yeah, you should try it.
You should really give $10 to charity.
Yeah, if you have $10 to charity, it goes to charity. It's not...
A pretty important charity that protects the First Amendment rights of people that make art.
Yes.
So you don't go to jail for making art.
Yeah,
that hurts no one. Did you ever hear the story about there was a man in Florida that was arrested and put in prison for drawing comics?
I didn't.
That happened. That's real. A man went to prison for drawing comics.
Well, they are pretty. I mean,
it's comic books. Oh yeah, I mean, anyone that even reads a comic should go straight to jail, to federal pound me in the ass prison.
you have to make that disclaimer.
Yes,
it's definitely federal pound me in the ass prison.
Federal pound me in the ass prison.
But Image is putting out consistently solid work, and you know, Boom, IDW, Dark Horse. All are expanding their lines. All are, you know, publishing good comic books for the most part. And I think that's, you're not going to see, I think that's part of the reason Marvel is trying to broaden their scope a little bit.
I think they can see the writing on the wall here, and they're saying, if we don't do all these things when we have opportunity, someone else is going to, and then we're going to be a dinosaur like old District Comics. Old District Comics!
You have to say in that voice.
You certainly do there, Sonny!
There's a character like that first Andy Daly podcast.
I would hope that. I'd hope there'd be an old prospector.
Who's like a poet.
A poet. A poet prospector.
They don't call him a prospector, he has that exact voice.
I mean, I think anyone can really do that voice.
Yeah. The indie books are... I mean, a lot of people only read indie books, and I don't blame them for that, but I think they should... you're missing out on a lot of good stories if you don't try at least delve into Marvel and DC. At least... Right, there are good stories in DC. I'll say that. Just not many of them. I think we do want to touch on the recent acquisition of Comixology by Amazon before we wrap it up.
I think it's
very important.
It is really important, and I love that clearly Comixology has been wanting to make a move like this for a very long time. It feels very likely that they have wanted, because one of the first things they did just, I don't even know how long it was after the acquisition.
A week.
Was it a week?
About.
That's moving very fast. They were clearly working on this while the deal was being done. They're like, okay, we've got backing by this huge, huge entity. We've been bought now. Now we can say, fuck you, Apple.
I don't know. I'm not sure where the direction came from. If that's I have a feeling Amazon is not too kind about giving Apple 30% of their money.
I feel like it was probably a mutual decision from Comixology and Amazon, that Amazon wants all that money, I'm sure. But, you know, when you're a smaller company like that and so much of your revenue is coming through Apple and you don't have that big backing, you know, you have to submit to the 800-pound gorilla. You know, you have to say, yes, sir, Mr. Apple.
Yeah. Apple, Comixology recently turned off in-app purchases for the Comixology app.
Oh, yeah. You can look at them.
You can read your comics through a new Comixology app that just released. You can use the old app to read all the other comics you had purchased.
There are no in-app purchases.
In Comixology.
In Comixology.
Because, roughly 30% of anything that you bought went straight to Apple.
Straight to Apple.
You have to pay the toll, basically. And Amazon went, well, I don't think we'll lose 30% of our business. And which is, I mean, that's basically the trade-off. You go, you think we'll lose 30% of our business? 30% of the people will stop buying comics through Comixology if we make them go to the website instead of through the app? They probably did some math and went, nah, probably won't. And if they do, they'll move back to the in-app purchases because make more money that way. Again, I don't know if you're aware of this, Eric, but if you go to the Marvel app or the DC app, which is basically just a storefront,
yes,
using this, you can still buy in-app.
Oh, can you?
Yes, because Marvel and DC are licensing it, the storefront, basically, through Comixology. But they have a separate deal, I guess. They can decide individually if they, you know, sell through Apple or not, allow in-app purchases.
Interesting.
So all those guys, most of the major companies have their own apps, at least licensed through Comixology. Dark Horse has always had its own app.
What a lovely app it is.
To our consternation.
Yes.
But I assume when those deals run out that Comixology will not allow them to sell it through in-app purchases anymore. This is interesting because there may be a split from Comixology altogether for some of these companies.
I really hope that doesn't happen because
Marvel already has their Unlimited, which is a separate app. And with some tweaking, I assume they could sell the new comics with it in the same kind of interface.
It needs some TLC, in my humble opinion.
No, it definitely does. But the Comixology's app is the best.
Yes,
comics reading app, and that's partially the reason it's been so successful. But I don't. When you get to the point where rubber meets the road, are these companies going to want to have to? The question about, the money, are we going to lose 30% of our business if we push people to the website instead of through the app? Probably not. People who read digital comics, they probably are familiar enough with website interface that they can handle it, even though the Comixology website is not great. It's lost my shopping cart multiple times in the past couple of weeks.
Myself as well. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, and but you're not going to get the same kind of on board, let me just surf around and try and find a comic to read. Like, I'm in an airport with my iPad, and I have Wi-Fi, I want to read a comic book, well, I want to buy something. Oh, I can't. Through the app. I'm going to read my comics that I bought 2 days ago. But I want to still read something, I don't have anything else. They can't market. They can't say, here's what's on sale. Here's what's hot. They can't do that. You can't redirect. Apple does not allow you to redirect to your own store.
Yeah.
So the people, it might, in the long run, cost them money because people aren't making as many impulse purchases. Or they might not, who knows, that one impulse purchase might be the thing that hooks them to a different comic and then they start reading that all the time.
Well, I mean, the real power of having Apple as a storefront, I mean, it's just sort of, it's waning. Because it was a unique thing years and years ago, you know, an app store, an iTunes music store, digital distribution. Apple, they didn't necessarily invent it, but they did it in ways that brought it into people's living rooms. And now Apple has not come up with their next new thing. They're possibly becoming irrelevant, and all these people are going around them and saying, well, we don't need to pay the Apple tax. We're gonna use different devices, and we're gonna be backed by other companies that are gonna, you know, treat us differently. I don't know that I'm excited about it, but I'm certainly not surprised.
No, and I think the other, that's the first big point. The second big point is with the power of Amazon behind them now.
Oh yeah.
How long is it before they push for a lower price point on new comics digitally?
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, the whole reason that digital comics are the same at the same price point is because they do not want to put comic book companies, Marvel and DC and all the independents, you know, all the direct market, the comic book stores,
they wanted
reassurance that you're trying to put us out of business. You sell new comics for a dollar
and
on your app.
I think we know Amazon gives so much of a shit about small retailers.
Yeah, they really care. They have.
I hear the sarcasm.
Yeah, they could give a shit about local stores.
Yeah,
and if they could,
fuck you. We're gonna deliver shit with robots.
Yeah, people. Fuck people. We get another 6 cents if we don't use a person. And the bottom line is all they care about, and
I don't really think that's the case. I think I'm not going to try and paint Amazon as a as an
monster?
Evil. I don't really think so. I mean, I would hope you're a fan of them. You give them a shit ton of money.
I love Amazon.
I fucking love them too. I think they're an amazing, brilliant company, and I'm actually very excited for them to take over Comixology. I want to see if it can be good for comics. And I think that it's almost inevitable. Just the whole model of internet business, that local stores are going to suffer, and we're going to see it become like these box stores and local places. They're going to be more places just to go and meet people or, you know, just be social.
Yeah. There's been a lot of research, not super strong foundation. I mean, there's not enough information, honestly, for them to get good statistics on it. But most studies have shown that most people supplement their normal comics purchases. They're not supplanting each other. You know, people who buy digitally were not buying in paper. And people who were buying in paper, if they buy digitally, it's in addition to.
Interesting.
It's not in replacement of. So I don't know how much it will actually damage. I'm certain that Amazon will eventually, if not are already in works of trying to push for a lower price point on digital comics, just because they think they'll probably sell more of them. But I don't know how soon that will happen, if it will happen. They certainly have the clout for it, but even if they were cheaper, $1 or $2 cheaper than the print edition, I don't know if necessarily it would hurt sales of the print edition. A lot of people like paper. They like it in their, they like the,
there's a lot to be said for that. People love to collect shit.
I mean, I like the trades and hardcover and stuff like that. I like buying those.
Having a big bookshelf of stuff.
Yes, but an issue-to-issue, digital is very superior. I don't have to go anywhere for it. That's a big plus. Don't have to leave my house.
Can do it in the shower.
If I put my iPad in a plastic bag.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Exactly. There's no ads.
Oh, good lord. Ads. Ads.
Advertisements in the thing I just paid for. In the middle of it. Ruining my story.
Do you ever, like, go and visit family, like, over Christmas or something, and they're watching television?
Oh, and commercials?
Yeah, and you're like, what is all this commercials? What's going on?
Oh, yeah. It's
like, I haven't seen commercials the whole rest of the year.
That's what I go out to lunch with my coworkers, and they're like, there's this commercial, you need to see it. I'm like, no, I don't. I really don't need to see a commercial. I don't care how creative it is. I don't need more marketing. I mean, I don't watch television, at least not as it traditionally is, you put it. I watch it on Netflix.
Yes.
Or Amazon or something. But, I don't, the commercials I watch are like the 6 seconds before a YouTube video or something.
Yeah, when we can click skip.
Yeah, until I click skip. I watch the bare minimum, and that's too much already.
Yes.
So I do not, it is very strange. But comic books without ads, I'm a big fan. And again, it's the same, the people that are hung, I don't have room. I have too much crap as it is. Getting more paper, just single issue comics and putting them in, if like there is a really elegant storage solution for it, like buying one comic as a display piece because you like the art, that makes sense to me.
Sounds like what you need is a bag of holding.
But putting it like in a box, just putting it away in a closet somewhere?
Yeah, it kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, like they're really nice pieces of art. They should be displayed nicely. And I think digitally is superior in most ways. It has little resale value or no resale value, but paper has almost none at all either. So it's not, most comic books are not valuable after you buy them. They're like used cars. If you take a car off the lot, it's worth half its value.
Take a comic book off the lot.
Yep. Exactly. But I like you said, I like Amazon. I'm hopeful.
Yes.
I'm hopeful that they will do good by Comixology and therefore by comic book fans. But I think with that, I think that about wraps our little discussion up.
It was a lot of jawing, wasn't it?
It was a lot of jawing.
Felt good.
But I'm up. I'm hopeful for the state of comics. I think
we're
doing well.
There are a lot of things. Part. Oh yeah, there are a lot of things to be excited about. A lot of talented writers. A lot of people excited about making good art, and that's the way you want it to be, you know.
Yeah, well, publishers taking chances,
yes,
on stories and interesting stories being told that could not be told any other way, which is the best thing about comic books.
It's a wonderful thing.
And the boob windows.
You know what? I say open up a window.
God closes the door, he opens up a window?
Yep.
He opens up a boob window.
When God closes a door, he shows you some boobies.
But, yeah. I'm a buy on the state of the comics industry.
I'm a buy as well.
So that's a double buy.
Well, it's only a little bit squishy.
Only a little tiny bit squishy.
Just a tiny, tiny bit. Right around where DC is.
Maybe they'll right the ship. Maybe they'll kick out,
I hope so.
Dan DiDio.
It's not impossible. Stranger things have happened.
It's true. Maybe they'll reboot the universe again.
Maybe they'll deboot it.
That'd be great.
That would be pretty good.
Could they do that? Please?
They could do whatever in the fuck they want. They could put Bucky in the DC universe.
He'll just be named, like, Bucky.
He'll be Autumn Soldier.
The Autumn Soldier.
They'll also have Spring and Summer Soldier.
Spring and Soldier. It's like the Lantern Corps.
Absolutely.
We'll just have, Soldier for every season. No one can have winter.
No one will see it coming when Monsoon Soldier comes out of nowhere and fucks them over.
Monsoon Soldier. El Nino Soldier. Yeah, watch out for that.
The El Nino Event Soldier.
It's played by Chris Farley.
Did you know that there's actually a La Nina?
I did. I did know that.
I did not until I read your mind and found that out.
Oh, wow.
So somehow you told me.
If you're reading my mind, I apologize.
You should. It's disgusting in here.
I'm sorry. It's a little sticky, I'm sure.
Ew!
But folks, that'll wrap this up. We do have a little bit of news to announce. Various things. One, we were taking off 2 weeks after this episode. So the, let me look at the calendar here. Let's see.
More or less the whole rest of May, isn't it?
Yeah, June 2nd will be our next episode.
Recording date.
No, first, we'll be recording on the 1st.
Okay, we'll be releasing June, on June
releasing
2nd.
Releasing on June 2nd will be the first episode of Season 2, as we are calling it.
Season 2.
We are going to try and widen our scope a little bit, much like we want out of our comic book publishers. We're going to try and do a little bit more. Try and get more guests on, fancy up our production a little bit, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And just try and aim a little bit higher. And hopefully we don't fall on our faces.
Well, yeah, that's how I make my living.
Falling on your face?
No. Just face.
Oh, I see.
Just, okay. You know.
Just your face. Gotcha. That's the face.
The three-step process. Face. Step 2, unknown. Step 3,
profit.
Right.
So there is that. So do not, you won't see us for a couple weeks. Do not be sorry. We will return.
Or ever, because this is mostly right now all audio.
That's true. You won't see us technically. I mean, there are pictures of us available, but you won't see us live.
You have to friend me on hentaifriendster.org. To see those pictures.
I would not suggest trying to go to that website.
That's not a real thing.
Well.
If it is.
Don't go there.
I'm going to go register that domain right now.
Hentaifriendster.org. It's the worst. I also want to announce that in celebration of our first calendar year, wrapping up, we are going to give away Batman Year One. The Batman origin story that's not bad. Frank Miller,
back when his brain worked.
Yeah, Mazzucchelli. Great, 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 great comic book. I will be posting all that stuff in all our social media. So if you watch any of those places, you will see it. Because I will be hammering it over and over and over and over again. You can enter into them, win that. We'll have a widget. A little handy-dandy widget you can use.
Widget.
Yeah.
Widget.
Anything else? Any other news we should cover? Yeah, folks, with that, this will be the end of this episode. End of season one!
52 episodes, guys.
Internet high five! Hear that?
That was amazing. How did that happen?
I don't know. Crazy.
Was it IPv6 or 4? Who knows?
I don't know. I can't figure out those numbers.
Numbers.
Oh, they're hard. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can search for us there. Subscribe. Leave us good reviews. Good reviews get us a better chance of finding more people. We like that, certainly. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. Like us there. You can get us on Twitter. Tweet at HBCHour. There you go. At HBCHour. On the Twitters. You can find us on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. I've recently been a little bit more attentive towards our Tumblr, so it's actually has stuff on it. You can also
stuff in our Tumblr.
Yep. You can also email us, handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. That's MixmasterCereal. And I'm on Tumblr, the same name. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can look at my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can see many of the other things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R Bad Example.
And, folks, you can reach any of those places. Please comment. Leave us suggestions, criticisms, ideas, thoughts, stuff. All that stuff.
Tweet Robbie the choicest pictures of your penis.
I'm not saying no.
I mean, you can't say no to that.
No. No direct messages, though. Please.
No. That's just weird.
That's weird. That's, no one does that.
Mm-hmm. You gotta take the wiener route.
But yeah, folks, with that, bring this episode to a close. Have a good one!
Rock and roll.